out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 10th of October 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at radioarian.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good morning to you. How are you there? Are you shivering there in the cold, are you?
Well, I just learned something. There was an accident where, I don't know if it was an accident or not, but somebody allegedly in the diplomatic corps killed a European somewhere. And the press is noting that no one knows where Sven Longshanks was at the moment they were killed. No one's quite sure where he was. So, you know, I hope you stay out of sight there, Sven. I mean, you know, no one's seen you and that diplomat in the same room before. So, you know, we're a little worried about you.
Well,
you keeping a low profile?
Yeah, I try to keep a low profile. It certainly wasn't me. But yeah, now that you've actually brought that up, I mean, I was going to bring up the fact that I've just got you to put your heating off and you're there shivering and complaining of the cold because I don't want any background noise. But since you just brought that up, Donald Trump has been attacked in the media over here, in the British media, for basically doing what all he can about this incident where this young lad has been killed basically in an accident by an American diplomat's wife. She managed to get back to America. Now, the old laws are if you get back to your home country or you get back to the city of sanctuary, you are exiled from the place where the manslaughter occurred. If you ever go back to that place where the manslaughter occurred, then the family of the victim have every right to kill you to exact revenge. So basically, because she's managed to get back to America, according to the old laws, that's it. The family have had justice because the woman's been exiled from Britain. She can't ever come back to Britain again or she will face justice. Well, Donald Trump has been told that she's not going to come back to Britain. Obviously, the Foreign Office over here in Britain have written to the president and said, can you arrange for her to come back? And he said, well, no, basically. She's been asked whether she will come back. It's up to her. She's now back in America. She has diplomatic immunity. So she said, no, she's not coming. And that's written on a bit of paper in Donald Trump's hand for his briefing. It says this diplomatic woman, she's not going to be coming back to Britain. Now, Trump has obviously seen that and thought, well, that's not quite right. This poor grieving family in Britain, they just want some closure on this. So he's given a press conference and he said, well, I'm going to speak personally to this woman. It was an accident. It wasn't done deliberately. And, maybe we could get the two of you to talk to one another or meet one another. But I'm going to do what I can, which, you know, is really, really good of him. But instead of praising him for that and saying that's really good of President Trump, they're attacking him and saying, why did he give her hope that this woman was going to come back from America? He didn't do that at all. It's just disgusting, really, the way that the news twists things, the fake news. It disgusts me. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Matt, before we get into the economy.
Well, your secret's safe with me, Sven.
It wasn't me. It's not even anywhere near me. And I don't go out in the car very much. And I certainly wouldn't be on the opposite side of the road. And I do keep an eye out for motorcycles. Yeah, well, let's get into the economy again, since that seems to be our favourite subject just recently. We're going to be talking today about the top five countries that have ditched the dollar. And just what that could mean for America, because apparently America makes $100 billion a year out of being the world reserve currency. Now, is that figure correct, do you think, Matt, or could that be an exaggeration?
I'm willing to say that it's bigger than that, because when you are, and it doesn't include indirect profits for being in such high demand, because you're the universal currency of trading. Those are just needing to buy the dollars to do it. It doesn't include the fact that when demand is high, the price is higher. So I'm sure it's much higher than that.
Well, they say that it's because America gets preferential loan treatment and gets less interest on the rates of the loans because they have this world reserve currency status. And of course, if the rest of the world ditches the dollar and stops using it, it loses its world reserve status. And that's that's at least $100 billion a year that America could be losing. And that's why this is an important subject. And we've got five countries here, very important countries, and they're all ditching the dollar. The first one is China. The ongoing trade conflict between the United States and China, as well as sanctions against Beijing's biggest trading partners, have forced China to take steps towards relieving the dollar dependence of the world's second largest economy. The People's Bank of China has been regularly reducing the country's share of US treasuries, but instead of promptly dumping the greenback, China is trying to internationalize its own currency, the yuan, which was included in the IMF basket alongside the US dollar, the Japanese yen, the euro, and the British pound. Beijing has recently made several steps towards strengthening the yuan, including accumulating gold reserves, launching yuan-priced crude futures, and using the currency in trade with international partners. Now, just stop there, Matt, just to ask you, what is this IMF basket that's being mentioned here? Does that include all the currencies of the world, or just the dollar, the yen, and the euro, and the pound?
Yeah, they use the word basket way too much in economics. I don't know what their concern is with that word, but no, these are the dominant currencies. These are the currencies that are used outside of just that one country's trade. These are dominant countries that get, as you say, preferential treatment because they're in demand far beyond just domestic use. And of course, the point of all of this is that these other countries are trying to get the U.S. out of that basket and replace it with something else. So these are just the dominant currencies. You consider it like the Security Council of global economics.
Right. Okay. Well, as part of its ambitious Belt and Road Initiative, China is planning to introduce swap facilities in participating countries to promote the use of the yuan. Moreover, the country is actively pushing for a free trade agreement called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, the RCEP, which will include the countries of Southeast Asia. The trade pact could easily replace the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, the proposed multinational trade deal which was torn up by US President Donald Trump shortly after he took office. RCEP includes 16 country signatories, and the potential pact is expected to form a union of nearly 3.4 billion people based on a combined $49.5 trillion economy, which accounts for nearly 40% of the world's gross domestic product. So I guess that would be 40% of everything that's produced in the world is going to be traded on this RCEP exchange, which excludes the dollar. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership it doesn't exist yet. It's only proposed 10 member states. And the strange thing, these are the ASEAN states. ASEAN was created by the U.S. is kind of an Asian NATO, although more recently it's included Vietnam. And, of course, then there's six of the FTA partners, which are China, Japan, India, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, which shows you that China is, far from a pariah country like it used to be. You notice how Taiwan is nowhere to be found on here, even though they're a dominant currency. Of course, North Korea isn't either. And you put all that together, you're talking about half the global economy. But now in more detail, you may ask about a currency basket. A currency basket also includes – it's also an investment term where you put currencies in one category that have different weights. And in an investment portfolio, they cancel each other out. So you put currencies of different countries, of different economies. If one does poorly, there's a good chance the other ones will do well. So over time, it will it will even out to zero, or you know, a slight profit in your case. So, but that's not exactly what's being used here. This is just the concept of a basket of dominant currencies. If you're an investor, even there, you buy the dominant ones. One will do better as the other does worse. Chances are it's a pretty safe bet for you. But the regional comprehensive economic partnership even though these were created by the United States, the ASEAN was created by the U.S. This is now becoming an anti-American concept, although it includes Japan, Australia, South Korea, Brunei, Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, and Philippines. I mean, these were the among other places, and these used to be allies of the U.S. So this is a very, very bad situation where former allies of the U.S. are getting together to keep the U.S. out of pretty much, 50% of the world's economy. And of course, you include India in there that used to be this neutral country. It no longer is. So this is an absolute, it hasn't come into force yet. China wants it to, which means it probably will. And the U.S. is, this is the ultimate American nightmare, to have this gigantic trading block of all of its former allies that keeps the U.S. out. And of course, it's keeping the U.S. out, not because of its own arrogance and military nonsense, but also because the dollar is just not stable enough.
Well, we'll have a look at India in a minute. But just to confirm there, so when Donald Trump tore up the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that was actually that harmed America because this new RCEP deal has been put in its place, which excludes America. Is that what you're saying, Matt?
That's not what I'm saying. Trump was absolutely right to do that. That was a disastrous trade deal. We've spoken about that before. TPP was a disaster. It did not, in doing so, I mean, I would have done the same thing. He was not able to predict the RCEP. And I think this developed as a proposed agreement largely because it's become now front page news because of the trade war with China. And of course, we already talked about the rest of Europe. And this is another reason why they're being excluded from it. Had that stuff not gone on, chances are the U.S. may well be included in it. But of course, these countries don't want to be dictated to. And that's all the U.S. does, economically, ideologically, militarily, and every other way. So this is a way to finally get the U.S. out and to humble the United States and to tell her that she's not a global power anymore, or a superpower anymore.
Well, that's good to hear that it wasn't as a result of Donald Trump doing that. Well, let's have a look at India then. Ranked the world's sixth largest economy, India is one of the biggest merchandise importers. It's not surprising that the country is directly affected by most global geopolitical conflicts and is significantly impacted by sanctions applied to its trading partners. Earlier this year, Delhi switched to ruble payments on supplies of Russia's S-400 air defense systems as a result of US economic penalties introduced against Moscow. The country also had to switch to the rupee in purchases of Iranian crude after Washington reinstituted sanctions against Tehran. In December, India and the United Arab Emirates sealed a currency swap agreement to boost trade and investment without the involvement of a third currency. Taking into account that India is the third largest country by purchasing power parity, steps of this kind could considerably diminish the role of the greenback in global trading. I would say the world's sixth largest economy and the third largest country by purchasing power parity. If you add that to the loss that they've made on China there, I mean, that's got to be coming up to, at least half the world's economy, I would guess, wouldn't you?
India leaving its former neutrality, because it generally leaned to the U.S. and it leaned to the U.S. because it was at war with Pakistan. Pakistan was an ally of China. But here you have India doing the same thing that Turkey used to, or Turkey is doing. They're buying Russian air defense systems. They're not accepting dollars for that, so they have to switch over to rubles. They buy a lot of their oil from Iran. Well, they can't do that anymore with dollars, so they have to switch over to another currency. I guess they're using rubles for that too, which makes a lot of sense. Or switch over to their own Indian rupee currency, which to some extent is being backed by the ruble anyway, and the yuan. because of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, India and Pakistan, while they're still, you know, enemies, are cooperating, at least in that respect. So the Americans are in so much trouble that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization has India and Pakistan as allies in the same organization, which, of course, no one could have possibly heard of. The UAE, you know, a longtime ally of the U.S., now involved in, of course, a huge oil producer, pushing the U.S. out. This is an absolute disaster. This is – and then now they're buying Russian equipment. And if they buy Russian equipment in one area, they're going to have to buy it in other areas to make their military, you know, interchangeable. So this is an absolute disaster for the U.S. And again, more pressure against the dollar. I mean, we're looking at utter – just these two countries here, we're looking at absolute catastrophe around the corner.
Well, I guess the logic was if we put sanctions on Iran, they wanted India to not buy their oil from Tehran. They didn't realize that they were just going to end up buying it in rubles and rupees, benefit Russia and India from doing it. Well, you brought up Turkey there, Matt, and of course Turkey's in the news at the moment for trying to create a safe zone, I guess, between Syria and Turkey, apparently so that they can offload all their refugees there. But at the same time, Erdogan is also threatening to offload all those refugees into Europe, once again, if the EU don't stop criticizing him. But that's for another day, I guess, possibly next week we can discuss that. In Turkey, earlier this year, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced plans to end the US dollar monopoly via a new policy that is aimed at non-dollar trading with the country's international partners. Later, Turkey's leader announced that Ankara is preparing to conduct trade through national currencies with China, Russia, and Ukraine. Turkey also discussed a possible replacement of the US dollar with national currencies in trade transactions with Iran. The move was prompted by political and economic reasons. Relations between Ankara and Washington have been deteriorating since the failed military coup in the country to oust President Erdogan in 2016. It's been reported that Erdogan suspects US involvement in the uprising and accuses Washington of harboring exiled cleric Fethullah Gulen, whom Ankara blames for masterminding the coup. The Turkish economy sank after Washington introduced economic sanctions over the arrest of US evangelical pastor Andrew Brunson on terrorism charges in relation to the uprising. Erdogan has repeatedly slammed Washington for unleashing a global trade war, sanctioning Turkey, and trying to isolate Iran. The NATO member's decision to buy Russian S-400 missile systems added fuel to the fire. Moreover, Turkey is trying to ditch the dollar in an attempt to support its national currency. The lira has lost nearly half of its value against the greenback over the past year. The currency plunge was exacerbated by soaring inflation and increasing prices for goods and services. And of course, Donald Trump is threatening to crash their economy once again if they're too harsh against the Kurds. But if Turkey has managed to dump the dollar, then what does it matter? What you know? I guess that's why they have done all this, is so that America can't actually have a hold over them. Is that right, Matt?
That's exactly correct. For the most part, the dollar is really the only leverage they have anymore. The constant attacks on Erdogan has been pretty extraordinary. Now we spoke about Andrew Brunson on this show before. There's 100% certainty he's CIA. Not sure about the coup, but Gulen lives here in Pennsylvania, about an hour from me. So he'll be there, you know, probably for the rest of his life. And then, of course, here again we have Turkey, essentially really not a member of NATO anymore. They couldn't possibly be, but still continuing to buy Russian missile systems like India has, and they have a military trade deal with the Chinese. And of course, they want to deal with the Iranians, like, because it's a very powerful first world economy, just like Turkey is, probably in less trouble than Turkey is. And keep in mind the enclave in Syria, and he's very careful to reassure the Russians, but this is really has more to do with the Kurds that Turkey's been fighting with for about 30 years now, this low-level, high-level, you know, up-and-down kind of war that they fought. Of course, the first thing they did is clear the area of Kurds, a group of people, quite frankly, I couldn't care less about. And for the most part, the Communist Party there runs the militias. So Turkey is a good guy in that regard. The Kurds are a longtime ally of the U.S. And that's what the Syria issue is about, at least officially. And I think practically, too. It's a buffer zone because there's still – that war is still going on. And the fact that the U.S. supports the Kurds is automatically making an enemy out of Turkey. Russia, China, Iran, three very powerful, three first world economies that have a lot going for them. You can't order countries not to trade with these dominant powers. And so all they do is say, okay, we won't use the dollar anymore. And now you have nothing to say to us.
Well, they're countries that are all very close together, aren't they? Iran, Russia, and Turkey. You know, America's right way over the other side of the world. And America really doesn't have very much leverage over Turkey anymore. Russia seems to have more leverage. It's just this economic thing. And even that, they've obviously taken steps to guard against Trump being able to use that. Well, the next one on the list here is Iran. A triumphant return of Iran to the global trading arena did not last long. Shortly after winning the US presidential election, Donald Trump opted to withdraw from the 2015 nuclear deal signed between Tehran and a group of nations, including the UK, the US, France, Germany, Russia, China, and the EU. The oil-rich nation has once again become a target for severe sanctions resumed by Washington, which has also threatened to introduce penalties against any countries that would violate the embargo. The punitive measures banned business deals with the Islamic Republic and cracked down on the country's oil industry. Sanctions have forced Tehran to look for alternatives to the US dollar as payment for its oil exports. Iran clinched a deal for oil settlements with India using the Indian rupee. It also negotiated a barter deal with neighboring Iraq. The partners are also planning to use the Iraqi dinar for mutual transactions to reduce reliance on the US dollar and banking problems connected to US sanctions. So basically, this is these sanctions on Iran, that they're basically going to benefit any country that wants to do business with Iran, because although they'll have to use a different currency, I guess they will be paying less for everything as well. I mean, it's sort of back to front, isn't it? It could end up actually benefiting Iran and benefiting these other countries that have alliances with Iran, I think.
And the U.S. still believes that sanctions somehow are a problem. The only place where sanctions are truly harmful is in Latin America, because these countries are so dependent on the United States, given the proximity to Mexico and then the U.S. But here, not only are these sanctions in the medium term, the long term, beneficial for these countries, but because of these sanctions, they're creating new institutions. They're creating new banks and new societies, new organizations that now can engage and trade on different terms using different currencies. So not only is this beneficial, but it's creating the institutions for a brand new trading regime that benefits regionalism and nationalism far more so than the globalism pushed by Washington and Brussels. So these are seeds of a new, a better sort of world order, for lack of a better phrase. These are new institutions that are going to soon take over without the dollar, and the U.S. is going to be kicked out of it. And, you know, as I've said many times before, you have a wounded animal that's now being pushed in a corner. That's the U.S. And what do wounded animals do when they're pushed into a corner? And you're going to start seeing more of that as the years go on.
Well, the final one we've got here, of course, is Russia. But just before we get into that, you mentioned Latin America there, Matt. I'm sure you must have seen what's going on in Ecuador at the moment. I find that particularly hilarious, this horrible, loathsome troll that they've got as a prime minister, Lenin Moreno or something, I think his name is. He's gone and gone to the IMF and got billions of dollars out of them. But in exchange, he's been told he has to remove all subsidies on diesel, oil, fuel. And of course, the whole country is now rioting and smashing the place up, burning things because they've got no heat. Because they can't afford to heat their homes, they can't afford electricity. This is all down to the IMF, all down to this communist Lenin Moreno, who, although he is a communist, he's doing everything at the beck and call of America. And his excuse for this is that it's Maduro. it's Maduro that has got these people all wound up and wanting to riot. It's nothing to do with them being freezing cold and got no electricity and can't drive their cars. It's all to do with Maduro. I mean, that was just so laughable. Have you seen any of that going on, Matt?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, communists working with the United States is certainly nothing new these days. And blaming Maduro, of course, no one's going to take that seriously, including in the United States. All this is typical IMF demands for so-called domestic structural reform, eliminating all kinds of social services and the safety net and subsidies and everything else, because those are the conditions under which you get these. This is what the New World Order is based on. It's based on restructuring the planet in exchange for access to credit. And that's why what we're talking about here is so absolutely significant, because pretty soon even that leverage is going to be gone.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, how can the IMF interfere with this when these countries are doing their own deals outside of the IMF, outside of the dollar, using their own currencies? And it reminds me of what the National Socialists did. I mean, they came up with a barter system with various other countries for imports and exports, and they cut the banks out of it. They cut the middlemen out of it. And that was largely the cause of the Second World War. And you've got the same thing going on now with these countries here that are all working together and cutting out the middleman and cutting out the American dollar. Well, let's have a look at Russia here, the final country on the list. President Vladimir Putin said the US is making a colossal strategic mistake by undermining confidence in the dollar. Putin has never called for restricting dollar transactions or banning the use of US currency. However, Russian Finance Minister Anton Siluanov said earlier this year that the country had to dump its holdings of US treasuries in favor of more secure assets, such as the ruble, the euro, and precious metals. The country has already taken several steps towards de-dollarizing the economy due to the constantly growing burden of sanctions that have been introduced since 2014 over a number of issues. Russia has developed a national payment system as an alternative to SWIFT, Visa, and MasterCard after the US threatened tougher new sanctions that would target Russia's financial system. So far, Moscow has managed to partially phase out the greenback from its exports, signing currency swap agreements with a number of countries, including China, India, and Iran. Russia has recently proposed using the euro instead of the US dollar in trade with the European Union. Once a top 10 holder of US sovereign debt, Russia has all but eliminated its holdings of US treasuries. Moscow has used the money to boost the nation's foreign reserves and to build up its gold stockpile to stabilize the ruble. Well, how is that new monetary system? How is that coming along now over there in Russia? I think we talked about it the other week, didn't we? How it was being really successful and actually moving into Turkey and wasn't it Qatar as well or something?
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a long time. And when Putin says you're making a strategic mistake, you better listen. Putin is not stupid enough to come right out and say, yeah, we're cutting out the dollar, goodbye. He knows what that may lead to. He simply just does it. And going to the European currency is a brilliant move, because clearly it's in the EU's interest to develop this humongous market and even beyond Russia. On the other hand, there are sanctions on this country. So now the holders of the euro are going to have to say, okay, do we want profits or do we want to please the United States? So, of course, you know, profits are going to be the primary thing. So now there's going to be a war between the euro and the dollar, as there already is between Germany and the U.S., because they're not pulling out their profitable investments in Russia. Germany and Russia are humongous trading partners, and they're not listening to the sanctions at all. France wants nothing to do with these sanctions. I mean, France has dropped out of NATO more than once in the past. So going, you know, using calling for the euro is a brilliant move, because it's going to split Brussels and Washington. Because clearly, you know, you have successful countries now using the euro, or I'm sorry, the yuan and the ruble yuan, and really the big issue here, of course, is to build up their reserves of gold, making them pretty much invincible. Building, as I say, these new institutions, SWIFT being just one of them, and Putin's looking to the long term. He's looking to the point where American arrogance and stupidity will have no relation to the Russian economy whatsoever. And that's exactly what these sanctions have done. So we can thank God every day that the U.S. government is so short-sighted that they'll put sanctions on these countries thinking that it's going to do bad for them. The U.S. is no longer a superpower, hasn't been in a long time, and these sanctions will do nothing more than ensure that the U.S. dollar is cut out of big global trade deals in the future.
You know, it sort of makes me wonder whether all these willful mistranslations of what Donald Trump is saying and all these attacks on what he's doing in the media and especially from the EU, if partially what they aren't doing is trying to get the European Union to be against America and against Trump, so that if they do pivot towards Russia and start doing these deals with Russia, people are going to just say, well, it doesn't matter. We don't want anything to do with America because of that nasty, racist, horrible, fascist Trump character. Because, you know, it is so bizarre the way that these heads of the EU are just constantly attacking Donald Trump. And even when he does things that you would think that they would agree with, they will still attack him. And it can't just be down to, you know, they just don't like the fact that he's an alpha male. So, I mean, that could play into it as well. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.